Go Loud. Talking Bollocks, a Go Loud original podcast. Sponsored by Right Style Furniture. Right price, right style, right now. Visit rightstyle.ie.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Are you in the middle of turning your house into a home? Get down to Right Style Furniture, an Irish family-run spot that's actually sound and won't sell you a sofa that looks like it's out of a skip. The house package sales are unreal. Sofas, beds, dining sets, the full works from just €3,649. Plus, they're in Fontaines, Belgard and now Omni Park as well. They're open 7 days a week and open late on Thursdays and Fridays in Fonthill and Omni. Handy if you're working all day. I've got my corner sofa in it and in the fire brigade to get me up off the thing. Visit www.roystyle.ie and when you shop in store, tell them Terence and Calvin sent you and they'll throw a discount on top of that as well. So get down to Roystyle Furniture today.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your weight in the ground. Fill your body up in. Work it hard and long. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
Right, this week I'm joined by Mark Meegan. Mark, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
I hope the last 10 minutes wasn't recorded because I don't want to say we'd be cancelled. We wouldn't be, but I just mean it just completely derailed the whole tone of this podcast going forward.
But this is the relationship that we have. Like, we talk a lot off podcast privately over voice notes about very, very serious matters.
We could say what it was. We're talking about social media activism, how the FAI have no backbone. And yeah, do you know where all stem from? Siobhan. Yeah, Siobhan was talking about what she drinks on a night out.
Yeah.
Right? And then I was like, you should switch a drink. And she said, Brian Kerr told me I should switch to drink a more orange juice on a night out. And you said, football, Brian Kerr. And then that was it. I was gone. Mark put €2 with me. I was out of here.
Well, listen, I'm delighted to be back.
I'm delighted to have you.
I really didn't enjoy the last time I was on.
I'm glad you're honest about it.
Not because of anything that you did, but I was just totally in my head. And we'd only like spoken on Instagram a little bit.
Briefly.
And Terry was away at the time in Thailand.
Yeah.
And I remember I'd only followed him for like a week and a half. And it was, I think, whenever he'd begun to have those serious pain issues.
Yeah.
But I remember going on to do the podcast and I was like, oh, fuck. Now, the person in charge of the marketing for my book was like, you know, very different audience now. And I'm like, okay, well, what do you mean? Like, just maybe like be careful with the accent. I'm like, what do you mean the accent? I'm not going to fucking change my accent. Just do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The South Dublin accent, let's be honest, it's probably the worst. It's probably the worst in Ireland. But the thing is that bothers me is like if a female comedian has a South Dublin accent, they're like, ooh, fair play to her.
Yeah.
Brave. She's courageously dismantling every stereotype about South Dublin affluence brick by brick. When I do it, it's posh cunt. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's bullshit. But I remember going on and I was like, okay, I have to talk about the book. I have to talk about sobriety. And I don't know if you get this or if you got this in your very early days. But you do... for a while really feel like the world will only see you as a sober person.
Yeah.
So I didn't really know how to like talk about anything else without it being about me being sober, because you sort of think, well, that's all I am. Yeah. I am now just...
it's a personality trait.
That's me. Like, I'm sober. That's what I have. I used to be sort of funny and mental and chaotic. Now I'm sober.
Yeah.
So I'll talk about that.
I used to... do you know when... anytime like someone new would join the company I'm working with and it's like, oh, give an interesting fact about yourself, I'd be like, I don't drink. And I stopped doing it after a while. I was like, surely there's more to it than that. Yeah. You know what I mean? But the thing about it was, it always sparked a conversation.
Yeah.
Always sparked. You're Irish and you don't drink. I'm like, yeah, that's a rarity. Yeah, I know.
To be fair, like, not drinking was everything.
Yeah.
You know, when you go from drinking a lot in the way that I did to then not drinking is as big as your drinking was. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's hard to identify, like, even socially as anything else, because you're like, well, what do I have to offer? Genuinely, like, confidence wise, I remember going in and someone's like, I'll just have a laugh. But I'm like, well, what do I have a laugh about?
Yeah.
Because I was sort of under the illusion that I couldn't, I guess, yeah.
But do you know what I loved about Mark? The first thing that I took from it, I loved how you identified that. Like, I come from a very privileged background and I had all these opportunities in life and I still ended up as an alcoholic. And I was like, fair fucking play to him, because he's just addressed the elephant in the room and he's owned it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if I was to say to somebody maybe who comes from where I come from, like, this fella here would end up in addiction just like any of you or whoever you know.
Yeah.
They'd be like, not in a million years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it goes to show, I've
gotten that reaction from some people. Like, I remember I did Blind Boys podcast and I did there was a Q&A afterwards and this lad put his hand up and he just goes, Mark Meegan. I was like, yeah. And he was like, you're posh.
Yeah.
And I was like, good stuff. Well observed. I was like, what's the question? He was like, well, what's your excuse? I was like, what do you mean? He goes, and this is literally what he said. He goes, well, at least working class people, like, that's what they have. That's their excuse. I was like, I don't understand what you're saying here. And his point was essentially like, working class people are justified in going into addiction.
Yeah.
Whereas you're not, because you've had a privileged upbringing, which is like so unbelievable. It's actually more offensive to working class people.
Because you're expected to go into addiction.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. You're essentially saying, right, mate, your life is so shit that you may as well get in the bag. Do you know what I mean? And again, it's such an unbelievable ignorance when it comes to addiction. Because anybody, by the way, who has addiction issues, whether it's alcohol, drugs, sex, cigarettes, sugar,
whatever
it is, it's a disease of the brain. It's got like it's got nothing to do with what's around you. I mean, that can, of course, contribute a huge amount.
Yeah, statistically, it may affect working class people more.
Yes.
But it's not a guarantee.
And let's also call the elephant in the room. There's no denying that there is more help readily available if you're privileged.
Yes.
So I'm not going to pretend, look, we're all one of the same. It's been just as hard as me. No. I was absolutely born into privilege and it is the way that it worked out.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to suggest that it was as difficult for me as it was for others. Absolutely not. But addiction itself manifests wherever and however.
It shows how, not real, because it's as most real as you're going to get, but I mean, it shows how applicable it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah. It's
non-discriminatory.
It's exactly. Non-discriminatory.
That's the word I was looking for. It can happen to anybody. You know what I mean? And just because it's happening to you doesn't mean you can't get over it.
No, exactly.
You know, like that. And that's what I loved about it, Mark. And even, like, I seen you in the Olympia there a couple of weeks ago and I said it to one of the lads because I was due to meet up with him after.
Mm.
And he's like, what's the thing? And I was explaining who you were.
Mm.
And he was like, oh, like, I don't really know him. And I was like, he looked you up then. And he was like, this fella, he's like, you come to see him? I was like, oh, I'd be good friends with him. Like, I chat to him regularly.
Mm.
And then he couldn't believe that, like, how posh you are. You know what I mean?
Do you think I'm actually that posh?
Yeah. Let's call it spade.
Is it,
Mark?
What, is the hair or the accent?
It's the accent.
Is it, yeah?
But I think you're a stylish fella. I think you're a stylish fella, but I think it's the accent.
But I think it's better to have this. Like, as in, sorry, I don't like my accent, right? But I lived in the UK for 10 years. I lived in the UK for more of my adult life than I lived in Ireland. But this is just my accent.
Yeah.
I don't trust people who change their accents. You
100%.
Know, you get these people who go to fucking New York for a week and a half and they're like, yeah, we just got back off the sidewalk. Are you joking me? These people are frauds.
Or culties. People who come from, like, they grew up on farms, go to UCD for 3 years and that's it then.
You know, that's a huge part of my audience. I'm not going to have a go. But, like, no, but, you know, these people, you know, these people who go to, like, New York, for instance, they go for a month, they come back with the accent.
You do a J1.
They do a J1 at Huntington Beach, they come back with the accent. They go to London for a year, they come back with the accent. Doesn't happen when they go to Thailand. Do you know what I mean? You don't see them coming back on.
Yeah, no. Don't do it. Don't do it. You do a good African accent. I'll give you that one.
Do you think so?
Yeah. Is that the only accent you do, Mark?
I'm trying to do more now because I do pranks. I wouldn't be great with accents, like.
I meant to call you out on that. I listened to that. You need to go off for a while, set yourself, then come back. Because it's like, I'm ready for this. The second a fella says hello, you just laugh and hang up.
Oh, I just love it. I get so nervous.
It was this. Did you listen to Siobhan? He literally, your man answered the phone, had the fella going, and then he just laughed and you have to hang up then. You're like, oh, that was being so
it's
good.
It's just like, there's something so awkward about somebody falling for it as well.
I know, but do you know what the worst thing is?
What?
Because you set yourself and there's so much tension in the room and everyone's being quiet. And like, I don't know, if you're trying to convince the fella, like his dog ran away or something like that.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, sis, John, do you have a Jack Russell? And you're like, yeah. And you're like, fuck, we have him. So hard from then on.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the hardest part.
Exactly.
Because you know your mate's going to go, and that's it, you're bollocks.
All it takes is that one, like that
snigger.
One was like when you were in class.
Yeah.
All it would take is like you look over the corner of your eye,
and
you just see your
over.
Mate putting his head into a school bag and just completely gone.
It's game over. It's like laughing at a funeral.
Oh my God. It happens.
Are you going to keep them going? Are you going to revive them? That's the word I was
talking
about.
We're going to revive. There will be a big prank revival.
Yeah.
We've got some plans over the next few weeks to like bring back some reoccurring characters. But there was a dilemma that was sent to me last week and I wanted to ask your opinion. I know we'll be doing your listeners' questions, but obviously when on the podcast, we get people sending in stories from like all over, right? And lots of people live colourful lives.
Very colourful.
We could sit here and sort of talk about addiction and I can wax lyrical about being a misunderstood little posh boy and all the rest, but like my life is fucking bland as in comparison to some of the stuff that goes on. We were doing a roast of neighbours, right, the other night.
Is it the one that I think you're going to say? Because
yeah.
I was looking at that being like, this is not real.
So I had her on Zoom yesterday.
No, come here. I know it was real, but I mean, I found it hard to believe. I was like, who the fuck? First of all, fair play to your listeners because they can find in you, no problem. They're just like, Mark, will you keep me anonymous? I'm riding my dad's ex-girlfriend or whatever. And you're like, what?
People are completely and utterly insane. So can I read this out to you? I want to hear what your opinion is.
Go for it.
Don't share my name, but I have one for you, Mark. So this is supposed to be about lunatic neighbours. You will definitely think that I am the loon. So I bought my own home in 2020, which I'm very proud of as a single teacher. Moved in just before COVID. One day I was enjoying the sun in front garden and got chatting to an older man in his 70s from a few doors down. He seemed nice and had only lost his wife the year before. I invited him in for a few garden drinks. Don't ask me how, Mark, but we ended up riding that afternoon. Monkey emoji. Few days later, I met my now next door neighbour and she says, I saw you talking to XX the other day. Don't buy any of his phones. They're all stolen. Turns out I took in the local criminal who was known in the area. Never even had a wife.
Oh, so many questions there.
Now, it's I know the you most had... insane thing I've ever heard in my life.
I know your reaction was you so many questions, but I mean, I don't think one podcast can fit in all the questions.
So, first things first, I just immediately replied saying, can I ask you what age you are? Because that's also vital.
100%.
I mean, if she's 64, fair play to you. Let the boys play. Do you know what I mean? There's no problem. And by the way, there's no problem in general as long as it's consensual and all the rest. So I go, can I ask you what age? She goes, I'm 31 now. It had been a while though. So that means she was 25 and he was 70.
She was 25 and held the boy a gaff as well.
This is the most amazing thing.
Yeah, on a teacher's salary.
In Waterford.
Doesn't matter where. Anywhere
no, I'm not saying
country.
That. I'm not having a go at Waterford. I'm just, you immediately. Man, it's Waterford. I know.
It's only Waterford.
Can we have a go at Dungarvan? So first things first, right? So she moves into her gaff before COVID.
Sorry, is this a thing? Like, if you haven't got your hole in a wall, like, you just be like, John, I will take any age.
Are you joking me? Is that, well, any age, I don't know. But like, you know, people...
Sorry.
Time spent apart from intercourse generally increases the hunger first, the thirst, the want.
Yeah, but like, do the standards drop significantly?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
They definitely come on. I mean, you've been in a relationship for a very long time,
no,
but like...
But this one I'm trying to ask, is it like, enough that you're going after a pensioner? He's a pensioner. And he was a pensioner at the time. This one I'm trying to say. It's not as if like he was 60 at the time and it's 6 years on and now he's officially retired.
But it's
he
also
in the 70s.
It's the sequence of events, by the way. So it's then like, so I just then said, she says, I'm 31 now, it would have been a while. And I go, I have so many questions for you. And then she goes, the only thing that's worse is that it happened again during COVID and then once randomly in 2024. I know it might reflect badly, but after a few wines, I go rogue. You should be talking to her about fucking drinking, not me. Worst of all, he even sold me a phone after the last time and a broke straight away, the absolute chancer. So let's just think about this, right? So she's bought a gaff at 25, fair play to her.
Yeah.
Unbelievable win, okay? She must have done some serious saving, whatever, right? She moves into her gaff, COVID hits.
Lockdown, sitting in the garden, what we all done, yeah.
Sun is shining, she's like, you know what? I'll nip out to the front garden to sunbathe. I would have thought usually the rear is
the play.
Depends where the sun is, doesn't it?
There you go,
met Aaron in the house. It depends on where the sun's hitting, right? So she nips out to the front beside the green bin and the ring doorbell, right? And she's lying there taking in the sun. And all of a sudden she just sees these withered eyeballs peer over the hedge. Like, how are you missus? Do you fancy a Samsung Galaxy? On tick. Do you know what I mean? She goes, no, I don't, but come in for a nag and a prune juice. Do you know what I mean? And then how does it go from chatting to this pensioner to... Like, did they shift, like?
I want to know, right? See the way it says, it happened again during COVID and then randomly in 2024. So the one that happened during COVID
they
was
weren't
more
random.
Planned.
They were
that
more...
was more planned.
But like, so you're having a few drinks, right, with this pensioner in your front garden. And you're thinking, fuck me, Leo, will you ever lift, restrict? We need to be further than our 2K, do you know what I mean? You start chatting to this pensioner. He talks to you about his fucking dead wife that doesn't even exist. And you're like, that's very sad. Like, how did she die? And he tells you that. Then, will I get you a drink? Yeah, cool. What are you on? Cans of Copperberg. Great stuff. Get a few of those in. At what point, like, when chatting to a man of 70, do you go, are we on here? Like, is this, do you know what I mean?
Is this happening?
Are we just graduating into it? Like, and then, the genuine question I had for her is, like, did they kiss first?
Yeah.
And where did he put his hands, like? Do you know what I mean?
It's just like a generational thing.
Yeah.
Like, back then, what way did you put your hands? What way did people used to meet each other?
Yeah, exactly.
Has it evolved since then?
And then, to go inside for the ride, was it like, did he follow her in? Did she...
Yeah, had they gradually moved in, as in like, oh, it's getting cold now, do you want to come into the kitchen for a while? And then it went, oh, was it like, you were getting around in the garden and you're like, upstairs, one of them.
Upstairs, I have a boner around 27 minutes, so do you know what I mean? So then they go upstairs and they ride, and that was it. And then off he goes. Then she talks to the neighbour, by the way, and the neighbour's like, yeah. Oh, that's Daft Eddie. Do
yeah,
you know
and
what
the neighbour spills the beans, and then she still runs
him
again.
Yeah, she goes back again. Because apparently after a few wines, she goes rogue. How fucking rogue? Do you know what I mean?
So there's a 45 minimum. 45 minimum.
Minimum age gap.
Minimum, yeah. So can we say... No, you can't say granddad. You could technically.
You could absolutely say granddad.
Yeah, no, he could be your whole granddad, yeah?
Comfortably, could he not?
Yeah, you could.
Yeah, because if he's 45, sorry, if his son is 50... No.
No.
The old maths failing me here.
Yeah, so he was 45 when she was born.
Yeah.
So he would have to have... He would have to be in his early 20s having a kid, and that kid would have to be in the early 20s having
still
her.
Like, yeah. Still
pretty
good
old.
Yeah, yeah.
It's still pretty old.
Yeah. No, definitely. Definitely.
So then off he goes on his merry way with his Tesco bag of life for phones, do you know what I mean, to sell those. I'd say he didn't know his luck.
Yeah, 100%.
I'd say he's thinking, right, at best I thought I was going to sell a USB cable instead of getting the right off a 25-year-old teacher. They obviously exchange numbers. You know, he leaves a Murray Mint on the pillow.
He lives next door.
No, but he doesn't, though, is the thing.
Oh, he doesn't?
She thinks, she thought he was a neighbour, but he was actually just some criminal going door to door selling phones.
Oh, that's a plot twist. Oh, I thought you said he peered over the hedge as in from next door.
No. So one day I was enjoying the sun in my front garden and got chatting to an older man in his 70s from a few doors down. He seemed nice, blah, blah. But anyway, a few days later, I met my next door neighbour and she says, I saw you talking to him the other day. Don't buy any of his phones. They're all stolen. Turns out I was talking to the local criminal. So he was just in the area chancing it.
You couldn't have to respect that.
I completely respect Eddie.
You do.
It's just complete madness, though. And then she goes off, and then a few weeks later, she's like, yeah, it wasn't that bad.
Do it again.
At least either Tinder or Eddie. And, you know, with Eddie. And then, sorry, after the second time, she then buys a phone from him.
And you've conducted a whole interview with
her. So we had her on the show yesterday, and we interviewed her. And she's, in her defence, by the way, she doesn't care, which is, why should she? I like seeing people
own it, like,
yeah. You know, because I feel like Ireland, there's so much shame in Ireland, and there's a real, like, oh my god, you fucking imagine that now, the dirty bastards, like. But I think fair play to her if she's enjoying herself and no one's getting harmed. Do you know what I mean? Why not?
There's just so many things there, like, how
it's one of those ones where the amount of times that we all suffer in life and you go, fuck me, I've got like a bad way of looking at the world, or I'm uniquely broken in my thinking or the way that I live, and then you hear that and you go, very normal lad, actually. I didn't even need to give up drinking. That is mental. Do you know what I mean? Like,
and come here, does she go into details about how it happened the second and third time?
The second time, it was very much like, I don't know, a booty call, like, where she said that she had done like a quiz with her mates during COVID and just got jarred and decided to text him. And he obviously was like, yeah, grand, I'll get the bus down from wherever he, you know, resides.
We're just passing up, getting on for free.
Free travel.
Yeah, why not?
Free
ride. Why did she buy the phone when she'd been warned? That's what I don't understand.
It's also just blurring, like, the lines.
Whatever about the riding, fine. Why did she waste the money on the phone?
So you would be less... like, if a 7-year-old shows up to your front garden, are you thinking, ride is not out of the question? The Galaxy fucking S38 isn't, though. Do you know what I mean? Is that what goes to your...
She got warned. She already wrote him, whatever. She went back. But, like, she got warned about the phones.
And also, there'd been a 3-year gap. Just save up for a new phone. Go down to the Apple shop.
You're
like,
able to fucking buy a gap.
You're able to buy... how come all of your financial acumen has just completely gone out the window when it comes to purchasing tech? You've gotten a gap at the age of 25 and then you have one wanton night with a strange pensioner and you're off. And then, fucking in for a penny, in for a pound. Do you have any iPhones, Barry?
Does our mates know? Has she told the girls?
She didn't mention her mates.
Yeah.
She said we had to change her name for the interview because she was like, the girls in the staff room in the school, you know, she doesn't want them to know, which is, I think, a reasonable enough thing.
Yeah, but she hasn't told her friend group.
No, but I asked her, did she have any form for this? And she said no. And I was like, are you sure? Like, it sounds to me like it'd be something that you're interested in, like, on a more, you know, consistent basis. She was like, no. I was like, what age is your ex? 58. Come on, like...
So she has.
She just hangs around the world. There's original aisles in Tesco's. You know what I mean? Waiting for people.
Yeah, even 58 to be in a relationship with a 58.
She leaves a trail of fishermen's friends behind her after nights out, hoping that some horny old goat will just follow her home.
Just fucking tear up a game of bingo or something.
58.
Not even 58.
Is he not?
He might be. Actually, he's 58 this year.
Happy birthday.
It's September.
Yeah, he's going to have a birthday. Everyone has a birthday every year. Happy birthday.
Do you know what I mean? Like, my dad's not even 58. Imagine that. And then his board would then be younger than me, significantly younger than me. Like, I think 25 is too young for me.
Oh, man. Like, sorry. Also, once you get to my age, like, I'm 35 now. When I see 25-year-olds, I'm like, oh.
That's a baby.
I didn't. Yeah, you're babies. Like,
yeah.
Complete babies.
Yeah.
So the idea of, oh, can I get you another drink, Bernard?
Sorry? Yes. Are you here to bring me my dinner?
No, just slip it in. No, that's...
That's a bit much. But like, I know the older you get, your age window does expand, and I get that. Like, you know.
Oh, by the way, I doubt he had to do too much sort of moral gymnastics to will I, won't he. I don't think this was a Sophie's choice for Bernard. I say Bernard like a rat up a drain pipe.
The point I was trying to make is if they're young enough to be a child, that's a no go.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you can have, like, you can have an age window there. Like, it could be even 15 years.
I feel like, though, once you get into these sort of conversations, you're wading into treacle. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If, like, when lad goes, do you think this... No, if you have to ask, you know it's wrong.
Wrong, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I remember a friend of mine rang me about 2 years ago. And he had liked another one of our mates' younger sisters. Now, she's 26 or something. Do you know what I mean?
But it's still your mate's little sister.
He liked a bunch of her pictures at midnight.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, why? He was like, I just couldn't help myself. Well, you could, like.
Yeah.
You could always just not. I was like, what were the pictures? Obviously, they were the Thailand holiday pictures.
Yeah.
And then the other friend was tick with him. And he should have been.
Yeah.
He should have been, because like that. And he was like, oh, but there's nothing, like, she's overage. He's like, yeah, but it's the principle, like.
It's a sister.
It's your sister.
Yeah.
And it's also, you've known her in context.
Yes.
That, you see, that's the thing. It's not like you just met this person randomly in a nightclub. You've been in the gaff.
Yeah.
You know.
When she's bleeding, playing with brats or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it is different.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. But yeah, when is this episode out, Mark?
This episode's out. This
is out Thursday.
It's out today.
It comes out today. It's right.
Actually, it was out. It comes out, came out yesterday.
Right.
So you'll be able to hear it, yes.
This is in the roast mortem.
Yes, I'm having a fucking stress. It came out yesterday.
I'm going to leave all of that in.
Means you can listen to it today. Just a little more. Try always in the show.
Before we get back into the podcast, a quick shout out to Whoop, who are supporting the podcast with an incredible competition. All the Talking Bollocks listeners can sign up right now and get 1 month free. Whoop will send you out the device free of charge, and you can try it for 30 days and see what your body's really telling you. But there's an exclusive competition as well. Anyone who signs up for the 1 month free trial at join.whoop.com/bollocks will be entered into a draw to be upgraded to a 12-month Whoop membership with an accessory kit, a sleep and recovery stack, a pair of Nike Alpha Flyers, and a ticket for the Troika Race 3 this coming April. All worth over €1,000. This is an offer that's honestly too good to turn down. So don't forget, head to join.whoop.com/bollocks. Sign up for the 30-day free trial and be in with a chance to win that unbelievable prize. Well, all thanks to the lads over at Whoop. This brings me on to the next thing I wanted to talk to Mark about, right? Because you've just done a show on the Olympia.
So, I did the Olympia on January the 31st. And
which was class, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. Like, it meant a lot. I remember coming out on stage, and I know, like, you and Terry have done, like, the Borgash and stuff. You've done these huge venues. I done the Ambassador and stuff.
Yeah.
But the Olympia was, like, a massive step up for me. So, I was shitting myself. But, I mean, when you come down backstage at the Olympia to run, like, to go out on stage, it's sink or swim, and it's like, right. And then I just fucking, just went for it.
But the best thing about it was, so you're up there and you're killing it, and everyone's laughing in unison, and it was like, oh yeah, that's funny, that's the punchline.
Yeah.
But then there was a time where you stuttered.
Yeah.
And I erupted laughing. And my board was nudging me, and she was like, stop it, that's mean and all that. That could happen to you. I was like, that's why I'm laughing, because that has happened to me.
Exactly.
It's so relatable, you know what I mean? People don't realise how easy it is that you could go on this rant, Mark. You can go on a rant and you could be 7 sentences into this rant and stutter.
You're gone.
And you're gone. That's it.
You lose all credibility.
Jump off the stage, it'd be easier.
For me, the worst thing is on stage, if I say something that's ahead of where I should be, and then I have to backtrack, because it's almost like you've revealed your trick. Do you know what I mean? You've shown them, and then it's just like, it's like when somebody says to you, repeat the joke, and it's just like, no, I don't want, you know, when you say something, so what's that? You go, oh, I don't have to repeat
the funny part. It's already gone. Like,
I only had one howler the night of the Olympia.
Which one was it?
I was talking, there's this story I tell about losing passports, and I remember Michael was like, you've got a bit of form for losing passports, and I said I'm more reckless with Irish passports than Leo Varadkar when Russia first invaded the Ukraine.
Yes, that's what it was.
And
I don't think that was a hell of a lot. I thought it was a good one.
I think it's a funny enough fact, to be honest. Yeah.
You get that one, Siobhan? I thought it was very good. I thought, like,
she's like, do more about pensioners' balls.
Well, is that not planned?
No.
Really? That's a great one to come up off
I
the cuff.
It was okay.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
I think the howlers put manners on you as well. I think it's good to get a feel for the room by not just everybody laughing and a sort of.
Yeah.
Because if it's too supportive, there needs to be a bit of antagonism between you and the audience, you know, because it's like a relationship.
Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was class. I loved how you were pulling up all this stuff off social media. There was one thing you pulled up off social media, like, oh, you read this on Facebook, and you had like the pictures all blurred out in the comments, but the name of the person was still there.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like,
GDPR, baby.
Yeah, but I was like, keep everything else anonymous, just leave the name there.
But you're allowed though, because if it's commenting under like an RTE or an Irish Times or something, I think that you're allowed if it's...
I'm not even talking about that. I'm just like, you're hiding this person's identity.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're keeping the username there. So it's like, so look that up. Like,
yeah, I get you.
But, it was class. No, it really was, Mac. I really enjoyed it. And as I said, I listen to your podcast, but Amy doesn't really. Mm. So I was kind of like, ah, look, you know Mark, he's been on the podcast. You hear me chatting to him, it'll be grand. She fucking loved it.
Oh, that's amazing.
She loved it, you know what I mean? It was deadly, and you did kill it.
Well, thank you. I think, you know what, like, it's, for me, I said this to Darren, like, coming home that night, like, the night of the Olympia felt how I thought my book was going to feel.
Yeah.
So, like, when I wrote the book, I was like, this is my way of explaining to people why I was a certain way for so long, and in a way, like, completely self-centeredly, like, I sort of almost thought that this would be like a way of fucking making peace with the past, and also like an apology, and like, okay, now, like, let's put this behind me, but this is how, this is sort of an explanation to say as to how things were, and here I am now. But I didn't get that feeling at all from the book, and it's not, I don't regret the book, but it just didn't, that feeling never happened, and it is what it is, and it's, the book is, I'm like, I'm so, so proud of how well it's done and whatever. But I don't think about it ever. Whereas the Olympia, like, walking out on stage that night, and like, I, my first ever show, like, in the Sugar Club in 2022, I had to go, like, to the GPs, I had to get fucking hypnotized and stuff, because I wasn't, like, I was rattling, like, I used, like, I still have anxiety, obviously, but I was, like, panic disorder, wouldn't, like, the idea of going on stage at all, let alone without a drink, was just completely, like, it never would have happened. So then, after the Sugar Club, I stopped doing bigger shows, and I was like, I'm only ever going to do small ones. So there's a place called the Bello Bar in Portobello that I just did, I do like 10 shows in a row, because there's only like 150 people each night, or 120 people each night. But I was just so afraid of the idea of doing bigger spaces, like the public speaking element, I just couldn't deal with it, the anxiety. And then even, sorry, doing your podcast, man, last year, like, I was shit, I was fucking, I hated... The worst thing about anxiety is you can be aware that you're experiencing irrational anxiety and notice that it's irrational, but you don't have the tools to dissolve it. So you're angry then, because you're like, I hate the fact that I feel so anxious. And I think people who, like, suffer from regular anxiety, they'll relate to that, because it's like, you can see it happening. You're going, oh, I know what's happening here, but I can do nothing to get out of it.
And is this all down to social anxiety, or is it because, like, you haven't got the alcohol as a crutch?
Oh no, I don't think it's still, I think it's, yeah, I think the alcohol was just something else that I used to treat it. Do you know what I mean? Because I never went on stage when I was drinking either.
Right.
When I was drinking, I just sat around fucking kitchen tables at 6 a.m. telling people I one day would be on stage.
Yeah.
You know, but never actually doing anything. Whereas, no, I think the social anxiety and just generalized discomfort with myself has always existed and will exist. And I feel like every time I come on your podcast, you know, I'm just announcing another diagnosis. But like, certainly getting treated for ADHD was just like the biggest. Last January, I got diagnosed two Junes ago, but then I didn't do anything about it. I was like, okay, now that I know I have it, I'll be able to think my way out of it.
Yeah.
And of course, you can't. Like, it's literally just the way that you're wired. And then finally last January, I was like, right, fuck it. It got so bad. I was like, I just can't, like, just so overwhelmed. I was like, I just can't do anything. Just, my life was still totally unmanageable, and I was like, I'm nearly 4 years sober, how is this happening that I'm still miserable, if that makes sense? And not miserable in all departments of my life, like, so happy and married and in love and all of that shit, and work was going great, but like, on a just personal level. Anyway, then I started getting treated for ADHD, and it was just like, bang. Like, it's not that the anxiety doesn't exist, but it's like, you do something small, then you realise that you can do something, and that, like, starts to change the core belief of I'm capable of doing things. So then you say yes to doing more things that are bigger, and then you do something that's slightly bigger. You know, it's just like basically rerouting the way your brain thinks about itself.
And see that what you said there, that you got from the Olympia what you didn't get from the book. Do you think that's down to the live audience, and it's so reactionary that, like, you know, all these people are here for you? Whereas, now I know it might sound a bit cheesy, whereas, like, anyone can pick the book up. You can't go to the Olympia by mistake.
Well,
you know what I'm trying to say?
Yes and no, but I think, when I wrote the book, I was so determined to not sound up my own arse, which I know, if you listen to the podcast, you're going, well, you're failing there, brother. But like, I feel like with the book, I was just, I don't want to say I was too hard on myself, but I think with the book, I was very, 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 like, from reading it, you might think that my life was one catalogue of misery, which it wasn't. Whereas now with my comedy and with like the podcast and stuff, and say going out in the Olympia, I'm able to be myself in all forms. So like, I'm able to talk about being an alcoholic, but not in a big like, woe is me, I deserve fucking whatever for being an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic, whatever. I'm grateful that I'm sober now, and you know, one day at a time. But I'm also then able to make a childish joke. I think in the early sobriety, again, it comes back to how we began this conversation. Like, I conflated sobriety with like having to be this one person, which is just like almost, yeah, so I'm sober now and that's me and I just have to.
And you're so serious.
Yeah, and I'm a serious guy and you know, I'm an artist now and I just have to take myself seriously. And it's like, you know what, Mark, you can still be you.
Yeah.
And you can still like have the laughs that you used to.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I guess I just feel more comfortable in my, like who
I am.
You
feel like you had to compensate that. You know, like, where you still had to be, like, ultra childish. Where, like, no, look, I can still be a fucking easy sober. Because I felt that.
I think at the beginning, like, I used to still go to pubs and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, smoke 50 fags in an hour and be like, see, I'm mad enough without the hair. And it's like, but man, you're, like, certainly don't look relaxed. And also, like, who are you trying to impress?
Yeah, because that's something I used to say. People like, you don't drink. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't need to be drunk to make a stupid decision. Like, I knew that I'm sober.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, why am I doing that? You know what I mean? Like, You're just carrying on for the sake of carrying on. You know what I mean? You're not even enjoying it.
No, but it is hard. Like, it is hard if you're, like, I do feel for, like, especially young men, like, if they are thinking about sobriety and, like, getting into sobriety, because, like, so much of your identity can be formed in a group. Do you know what I mean? And, like, young lads and going out and doing things and going on trips and being a part of, like, group, whatever, adventures. So then if that's, like, if that just gets taken from you via sobriety, I don't say taken from you because you're getting everything back, of course, but, you know,
if that's cut off,
if that's cut off, I can understand why, like, even with the book, like, I was only 18 months sober when I wrote the book. Now I'm like, Jesus, what were you thinking writing a book after 18 months sober? But I don't regret it because that had to come out of me. I had all the, like, I had no idea how to live life when I was sober. Like, no idea. My first date with my wife, that was the first time I'd ever been on a sober date. Like, do you know what I mean? I was totally emotionally ill-equipped to process adult life. But at the same time, I didn't know that, if that makes sense. So, like, when I stopped drinking, even though I was 30, I was probably 14 emotionally. And I guess I really, really empathize. And I'm still early sobriety, by the way. I'm only 4.5 years. So it's not like I'm, you know, I have any of the answers now. I never do. But, like, I guess I empathize enormously with those first year to 2 years of sobriety. Because, like, it is just, who the fuck am I, like?
Yeah.
And if you're surrounded by lads who are still going out every weekend, or, by the way, people who are married, and all of a sudden you're just expected to go to, like, the gym once a week and go for a walk with the dog and a coffee on a Saturday morning and go, cool, you're happy now? It's like, well, 6 months ago I was in Ibiza doing X, Y, and Z. So I can understand why people act out.
No, I understand it, because it's not just a switch.
No.
The only thing that switches is that you're not consuming alcohol.
That's it.
So that's what that is.
Exactly.
But, like, yeah, you still have to get your shit together. Yeah. Yeah. This is just giving you the, well, it's giving you the allowance to do that, because, like, you're not going to get your shit together when you're fucking out for 3 days of the week and then you're hungover then the other 3 days of the week, and then you have to one day to get your shit together, and obviously you can't do everything in one day, and then the cycle starts again.
It's like I used to talk about, like, you know, I'd wait until I was on the air coach to the airport to download the meditation app to try and solve a lifetime of anxiety in the space of 25 minutes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And then you're gone again. Like, it's by stopping drinking, you're giving yourself that space to even start. Like, firstly, the dust has to settle. Like, and I don't, you know, my problem is I want everything now. Like, the moment that I stopped drinking, I wanted to be sitting on top of a mountain with my legs crossed. I wanted to be perfectly content. I wanted to, like, walk into the arms of everybody that I hurt over the years going, look at how great I am now. None of that, like, you know what I mean? That's all garbage. That's still just the crazy brain, brain looking for, like, constant reassurance and whatever. But stopping drinking is like the dust settles. And then, for me anyway, and this is just my experience, but, like, all this shit had to come out. Like, all this shit that I was holding on to from when I was a kid, like, do you know what I mean? And slowly but surely, like, for me anyway, by just getting all of that out and, I guess, then living differently, like, and, you know, these are all cliches, so it's nothing profound, but it is, like, who you surround yourself with is everything. And, like, I'm fortunate that, like, I don't have many friends, but, like, the friends that I do, I would talk to about
100%.
Anything.
It's quality over quantity.
And, man, even, like, myself and yourself, like, we don't see each other very often, but I would send you voice notes. Like, a couple of weeks before my daughter was born, there was a tragedy in my family. I got on to you straight away.
I remember that,
man, and, you know, we were just back and forth. And, like, that's what I value in life, is, like, having people in my life who I can just get on to with them. And, like, by the way, who get on to me as well, and I can be there for people. But it's just, like, the sobriety piece is, it's so weird. It's like, it's everything. It's absolutely everything, getting sober. But at the same time, it's literally the beginning. Do you know what I mean?
But that's why it's called recovery.
Yeah.
And not recovered.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Isn't
it? So you're on this journey.
Yeah.
And there is no destination.
No.
It's just a journey.
No.
Otherwise you'd be recovered.
And some people, funny enough, some people do say that, but I try not to attach myself to too many rules about sobriety,
yeah.
Because I don't know how I'm going to feel. And like, that's why even when I wrote the book, I remember somebody in my family was like, don't write the book.
Yeah.
You know, that's your personal business, whatever. And I remember being really upset by that. But then it's like, no, do you know what? Like, fuck it. I'm doing it and I'm glad I did it. Because also, even if I feel differently to how I felt in some of those pages of the book then, that was true to me then. Like, then that was fucking early sobriety. Yeah. And I mean, even recently I met somebody who had read my book and they were talking about it. And I just remembered a piece of it that like I hadn't thought about in a long time. And I was like, wow, like you're only 4.5 years away from what that was like, man. Like, that was bad. And you know, you can forget, like you can just forget because your life becomes, as I said, you know, your
significantly
life
better,
and you get these great relationships, yeah. And you get lovely friends and like a wife and whatever, all this stuff. And I'm living this lovely life that I can then all of a sudden forget, going, do you know what? Like, I'm actually quite well now. I've got my shit together.
Mm.
And not necessarily can I have a drink, but you can just forget to remember, like 5 years ago, like I was in a very, very, very different position than I am now.
Yeah.
And that's not guaranteed. Like, do you know what I mean? That is contingent on me, you know, doing certain things every day.
Yeah. Keeping it together. Yeah. 100%. And it's fucking great to see you. And you've had a mad few years when you think about it. Like, I know we keep saying about the Olympia and how big that was, but like, as you said, you've met your wife, you're now married, you now have a fucking daughter together. Mm. You know what I mean? Whereas it's like,
magic.
In the blink of an eye when you think about it, it's all happened so quick. And you always say, this is what's promised to you. You know what I mean? This is what sobriety has given you.
Yeah.
You know, it's great to see. And I think you're a role model in that although you're saying it's not easy and you have to do a lot of work, but this is what you want. You want people to be looking at this and being like, you know, if you do these things, you can get this stuff. It's not just, he stopped drinking, now it's great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think the great thing at the moment is, like, as you know as well, there's 1,000 different versions of sobriety doing rounds.
I want to go back to what you're saying about the rules. I like that, because when you think you're not doing one right and it's broken, I'm not doing it right, and you're going to fall off the wagon then.
Yeah.
Whereas I know some people fucking white knuckle it.
Yeah.
I know some people go to meetings.
Yeah.
I know some people who lean towards fucking faith.
Yeah.
There is no one way of doing it.
I used to try, before I like properly sort of surrendered, as it were, like I tried to do it myself. And white knuckle, for me, white knuckle sobriety is worse than drinking. In terms of like the isolation, the loneliness, the noise in your head, that like deafening fucking self-hate and irritability and unmanageability and incompatibility with life, for me was me going sober and like by myself. It's like I was allergic to my own skin. And I take 3 weeks off the booze and then I go out and drink to prove that I wasn't alcoholic. And in that night, I'd just be completely gone. Do you know what I mean? But I'm glad that those things happened, because they eventually led me to the place of going, right, I am actually properly fucked. And this like elusive idea of, well, I couldn't be an alcoholic because I don't do X, Y, and Z, like that illusion was shattered. But look, there's 1,000 versions of sobriety out there, and it's not like that there's one out there. I would say that there's definitely one that there isn't, which is somebody selling a sober course on Instagram.
Yes. Do you know what? It's taken a lot for me to do over the last few years. And I'd like to say my missus would be proud of me. Stop commenting on things on Instagram. Yeah. I used to do it all the time. Mm. Maybe it was before I had the podcast and people wouldn't know who I was.
Yeah.
I used to do it all the time. Like, if you, I'd comment on your video, Mark, and whatever you'd say, I'd say, that's what I do. Like, you know, and sometimes I do it just for the crack, just to wind people up. And then I stopped. And now, what I do is I show other people, I was like, do you see this fucking idiot? Do you see this? And lads are sending me stuff now, being like, I'd love to comment on that. And I'd be like, why don't you comment?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you haven't got the fucking...
I struggle with it as well. Like, the letting go and just... Because then I'm like, but why do I care? And why do I even have to say that?
There is things. There is certain things that need to be called out.
Because it's vulnerable people, do you know what I mean? And I think this idea of just like selling there you go, sign up to my fucking Trojan. It's always something Greek.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Sign up to my Trojan 300 Spartan Balls course, and we'll get you off the bag gear and everything. And in 3 months, you'll have 5 businesses.
I seen one the other day, and a fella's like, are you doing this, this, and this? And it's like horrendous things, you know what I mean? Like, are you fucking cheating on your missus? Are you doing this? Yeah. You not seeing your kids? Are you broke? Do you owe all your money out to a dealer? Are you missing work?
Yeah.
Well, stop spending all that money then. Just send me the 300 quid. And I'm like, imagine how desperate someone would have to be to even consider getting onto him, and not all the other avenues that are out there to help
you. They are, man. I used to, like, I messaged Frankie Boyle at fucking 6 a.m. one time, like, as comedians, and it's like, because I knew he was an alcoholic. And I just messaged him dribble, because like that's what these days. I know lots of people. I've met people in recovery from them messaging me. Like, my my sidekick on producer,
yeah.
And he's one of my closest friends now. That began with him messaging me, and he knows this is like our way. We talk about this in the live show, it's not private information. But Mystery Mick, Michael, like, he messaged me at 6 a.m. saying he was a fan of mine and he wanted to stop drinking and he didn't know how. Do you know what I mean? And that's the great side of it. That then, and by the way, I didn't get him sober. He got himself sober, and I put him in touch with other people. So it's nothing to do with. It's not like I did anything for him in that sense. But like, imagine me going, yeah, mate, just wire me £200 there.
Yeah,
and we'll get the
album. And it'll be all sorted.
But it's like those personal trainers. Like when you see those videos, it's like looking for 12 hogs. It's always always directed at women. Looking for 12 hogs and Balbriggan with sweaty thighs and low self esteem to come to my fucking women warrior course.
But
like
the thing about it is those people are not suffering the way people in addiction are.
No.
Not that they're not suffering, but they're not suffering to them extents. And I seen a fella doing it. He doesn't even live in Ireland. And I was like, a friend of mine sent it to me and like, look at this fucking idiot.
Mm.
And that's when I had to really like being like, I'm dying to comment on this. And I was like, let's say I do send him £300 and it's 4 o'clock in the morning, Saturday going into Sunday, and I'm about to slip. And I try and ring him. He's not even in the same country as me.
Yeah.
What the fuck's he gonna do?
But also, even the idea of like, what are the fucking skills here? Do you know what I mean? Mm. What are you offering other than like, what's the solution here? The solution is to talk to you about like the, like, are you my therapist as well?
Yeah.
This is dangerous. Like, we all,
what's wrong with you? I'm gonna go on the bike. Don't do that. No problem. Thanks.
Oh yeah, just go. What you need to do is lift a few weights and bang a few, lash the coffees into you. You know, the greatest advice somebody gave to me in early sobriety was, it was literally like my first or second week sober, and I remember my phone ringing and I was like, who's this pervert ringing me? Because like, I was, you know, when you first get so, like, I still like had this perspective of the world being such a negative place. Like, and the only reason somebody was ringing me is because they want something, you know, because that was my head, you know? And I was like, hello. And he was like, how are you? I was chatting to you earlier. And I was like, yeah. Like, does he want to ride me? And he was like, no, he just wants to fucking help. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he was like, Mark, your head is like a dodgy neighborhood. Don't go in there alone. And it was like, it's great advice. Just like, you know, anything that you're in early sobriety, because you get the maddest thoughts. Like after a week of sobriety, I was like, I'm moving to Copenhagen. That'll solve. You know what I mean? You just get the weirdest notions. But, and it's one that I'm very uncomfortable talking about in lots of contexts. I mean, after the book, there was articles like Mark Megan on his knees doing X, Y, and Z. And it's like, this is what you're taking from the book. And by the way, I don't give a fuck about what you take, like in terms of like,
you put it in
I'm
there.
Not looking for sympathy. Yeah. I put that in there knowingly. You haven't caught me.
Yeah.
But also, as anybody with addiction issues will know, the shit that you relate to with people isn't the good stuff.
Yeah.
A lot less people will relate to me when I say, oh, I've got a wife and a lovely baby. They will relate to me saying 5 years ago, I didn't want to be here. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. They relate to that stuff. You know, when we talk about darker days, that's the glue that unites you with other people suffering in recovery. And for then, like for some fucking clown to go out and go, oh yeah, there we are. Oh, we got him. You know, got him. Look at that. It's like, great. How are you going to encourage other people to come forward if that's the sort of mockery that you want to make of people talking about this stuff? So I don't know. That's just my little self-righteous outburst. But I'm more than happy always talking to people who actually, you know, who get it.
Yeah. I actually wanted to talk about Mystery Mick and the journey that he's on now.
He's just one of the greatest people, by the way. And like, forget me. Michael O'Malley, his name is Mystery Mick. Yeah, if you listen to the podcast, you'll know he's got the greatest laugh. The greatest. Yeah. And it's a word that I don't like using because it's just overused everywhere. But his energy is just, he is the, like, you know, man, he is the loveliest guy. He's also getting married, like.
Yeah. So he's getting married and he decided 100 days out from his wedding to want a weight loss journey.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love it every day. I look forward to his update every day he does on Instagram. He puts up a reel of what he does in the day. And it's his approach to weight loss.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That, again, it's not like he's not going to be finished in 3 or 6 weeks' time.
Yeah.
It's like, this will take the 100 days till I get married. And even maybe even beyond that. But God only knows where he goes with it.
We did a weigh-in at the Olympia, and that was the January 31st. And he started, was on the 1st of January.
Something like that, yeah.
So he was, what, like 247 kg?
Starting
at 247 kg, and he lost like,
I think he was down 20 kilos or something like
that. 20 kilos in a month.
In a month, yeah.
And he's not in the fucking Monjaro, like, do you know what I mean?
No, he's just,
he is dieting and he's exercising and he's,
you know, and not even extreme. No. Like, there's some days it's like, I was flat out and walked today, couldn't go out, so I went for a walk after work before I wound down for the evening.
Mm.
I just got me 10,000 steps in. I was like, that's so easy and relatable. Yeah. And it's not like, oh, I was out fucking dumbbells around the gym today and I ran 10K. It's like, no, I'm just doing the simple stuff. And even to some stuff, he's like, played 5-a-side with my mates.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, do you know what I mean? Anyone can do that.
But I think as well, what Michael's doing is, which you just want to see more of, it's like radical vulnerability. I don't mean radical vulnerability in the sense that he's like oversharing. He's just been completely honest, right? Yeah. And he's saying, my weight got to a place where I wasn't happy with it. I was concerned about my wedding coming up, you know, all the rest. And this is why my self-esteem was being affected, my, you know, self-image, my self-worth and all. And I want to make changes. He's not coming out and saying, in 90 days, I'm going to go from zero to hero. I'm going to go for the, and I'm going to be crushing life and it's going to, absolve me of all my other issues. It's like, it's just being completely honest about where he is. And I think, I mean, I know fucking like the manosphere, whatever terminology they're using to describe it these days. I think the more men who are just like, just being honest, and it's not necessarily about having the answers, because he's not professing either to be like this fitness guru.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He's not saying, oh, and by the way, after the 100 days, you can buy my course. Now, I do think he would actually be an unbelievable person to train people. But, you know, like, I think he's, again, he is just being himself, and there's so much currency in that.
Yeah, it's the type of content we need more of online.
But look at you guys. Do you know what I mean? Look at what you guys have built. And like, me and you always laugh about it for a number of reasons when we talk about like the industry and stuff. And like, I even was talking about on our podcast recently where people talk about you two. And it's like, oh yeah, we'll get the lads. We'll get them to do, let's get them to do something. Do we have anything coming up on inner city? Just get the two lads to do anything because they're talented. It doesn't all just need to be about that. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And I'm like, you guys have built this phenomenal brand, which is what it is, but you know, a community, a brand, like you've inspired, helped and connected with hundreds of thousands of people around the country. And you've done that from being, and again, the word that gets overused, but authentic. You are just yourselves. And I don't mean authentic because you wear fucking tracksuits. I mean authentic because you're being yourselves and people will connect with people who are being sincere. Do you know what I mean? And like, fucking industry people, man, are just...
Do you know what was funny? After the Olympia, when I messaged you and you were like, I know it's so cheesy and all, but like, I can't believe you get to do this. And I was like, don't think it's cheesy, because it took me long enough to get over the fact that it is like, oh, it's cringy. You can't look too serious about like, oh yeah, we sold it out, but like, it doesn't matter. We'll move on to the next one. It's like, no, take a fucking in, because there is a big achievement.
Man, it's like,
it's huge.
To be able to walk
in... You're the reason why people are going out. Imagine that.
To walk into a dressing room and to see my name on it, right? And like, to be able to like see my mum and be like, I've sold out the Olympia Theatre. I don't care how cringy it is. That is something I will remember for the rest of my life. You know, my daughter, Rosie, her first ever gig was the Olympia to see her dad.
Yeah.
Like, that man is magic. Like, that is to have been where my head was. And I can't ignore the privilege. I can't pretend I didn't have this fucking gilded upbringing, but I can tell you where my head was. And the person that I was in my head never in his wildest dreams thought that I could be walking out onto an Olympia Theatre stage that was actually just me. Do you know what I mean? And to have all these people in the audience and also to be comfortable in my own skin. Like, that is magic. That is truly magic. So it's like, it is a bit cringe, but we are so lucky. It's a Tuesday afternoon. This is what we do for a living. Like, you can never take that for granted.
I was going to say to you, do you need to plug anything? But Cork ended up getting across the line in the end, didn't it?
Yeah, Cork and Limerick got over the line. And
I seen what you're doing, clever marketing. You're like, oh, Cork, Limerick sold out before, yeah?
Yeah.
It's going to sell out before, yeah?
That was good. Do I have anything? No, but if anyone wants, this is random and there's no benefit to me and it's not a course, but if anyone out there is trying to quit smoking, I've set up a little community. It's completely free and it's also, all of the links are from the HS and the WHO and stuff, so there's nothing spoof. It's not my course, but it's a community of people who are quitting smoking and helping each other. It's called Live Laugh Lungs, livelaughlungs.com. If anyone out there is trying to quit smoking or vaping, just, you're welcome to join. As I say, you will not be sold anything. There's no advertising. It's free of charge, and I'm talking with the HSE at the moment to try and get them involved. But
there's a few hundred people already.
Already like 500 people trying. And crazy. You see, there's a little chat box, so people are chatting with each other, and you can have like a quit buddy and stuff. And if you're trying to quit smoking, or if you feel like you need to get off the vapes, because they're the fucking devil, by the way, have a look. And aside from that, yeah, look, I'm on Instagram at Megan Mark.
You did. the weekly roast.
My podcast, The Weekly Roast with Go Loud, is out every single week on Wednesdays, and my bonus, The Roast Mortem, is out on Thursdays. And that's it.
And if you want to hear about a single teacher in Waterford,
that's it. If you're a single gent in the 70s and you fancy rattling, you know, head down to Dungarvan over Sunday afternoon.
Do you want to? Like, is it a diss track? Does she give him loads?
She gives him loads. You'll be able to tune in on the weekly roast though, for sure.
Is this going to be like fucking 2024 and Drake and Kendrick go dropping every couple of days?
this is
what's
going to
be like. Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure.
You're a gent.
I would have loved to be here for another few more hours, because I could talk to you all day. It'd be really good. And do you know what the best thing about the conversations is? God only knows where they'll go. There's nothing that's off the table.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
I love it.
And we haven't even got into the other stuff. You're going to stick around and do a bonus episode with
Let's do it.
Ray Siobhan, take us out.
Subscribe to this podcast for free on the Go Loud app. What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a
hypnotic.